There was a lot of bad news regarding the Red Sox on Tuesday, but here on the Locked On Red Sox, we try to stay positive as we have on Micah Storm, aka Ballpark Buzz, from Twitter to break down all the injury updates as well as recap some moves that the Red Sox made on Tuesday. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to welcome you back into the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. I am your host, Massachusetts Pirates team insider Jake Ignaszewski. And on this one, as I mentioned in the opener, we're going to try and stay a little bit positive. We had a very special guest by the name of Micah Storm. He goes by Ballpark Buzz on Twitter. He's a very passionate Red Sox fan that does a great job of not only mixing facts, but with his passion as a fan to give his insight. And him and I had a great conversation breaking down a little bit of some of the injury updates that came out on Tuesday regarding Chris Sale, Michael Wacha, as well as Trevor Story and Tanner Houck and others. And we also talked about the new minor league signing of former Mets reliever who used to be an all-star as well, and sort of where we see him fitting into this Red Sox team. And then both Micah and I give our thoughts on this direction of the Boston Red Sox as they struggled a little bit during a series over the weekend against this Kansas City Royals. But we tried our best to stay positive, but also made sure to put a lot of our passion as well as some facts in there to give you a great conversation episode. So let's listen to Micah and I's conversation now. I am here with Micah Storm, aka Ballpark Buzz, on Twitter. And Micah, I've been really excited to talk to you. You have some great thoughts about the Red Sox, not only throughout this season, but you know, with everything that goes on, it's really cool to see, you know, the passion that you have for this team through your tweets. But I bet it's been a little bit tough with how things have been going so far over the last 2 or 3 months.
It has been. Thanks for having me on. I'm a diehard Red Sox fan. I'm the peaks, the valleys. I'm going to be following this team. I've been trying to find the positives in the last couple of weeks. It's been a little hard sometimes, but I still think there are some positives, even if it means that, you know, this, they may not be in playoff contention, but they still can, you know, show development for the future.
Right. And that's one of the biggest reasons why lately I've been focusing on the minors. You know, I had Tristan Casas on, I believe it was Monday, and then, you know, also was able to speak with Ian Kundle for today's episode, just to sort of look towards the future, some positivity, especially with what happened in Kansas City and pretty much the circus that happened this past weekend. But that's one of the biggest reasons, if you're watching the video version, I'm wearing my 2018 stuff, doing my best to, you know, maybe put some good juju into this Red Sox team, think back on some better times, and better times, I hope they come, because, you know, we got a lot of bad news today. We can start off with the one that happened, I believe it was at like 11 o'clock, just out of nowhere. Chris Cotillo reported it. Chris Sale injures his wrist after a bike accident and is now out for the season. You know, obviously we saw him get injured after the first inning and his second start coming back, breaking his pinky. Wasn't really expected to come back anytime soon for the Red Sox, maybe even not even for the rest of the season, but really tough to swallow as a fan seeing this update.
It was, and I, you know, it came up on my phone and I was like, that's got to be like a joke or something, because like he broke his pinky, why is he on a bike, how'd he break his wrist? Like, I just was like, no way. I mean, is this injury the end of the world? Probably not, because how many innings would he have actually thrown if he was able to come back at the end of the season? So, I mean, I'm not sure it really hurts this 2022 Red Sox team. But in terms of morale, I just felt like that was one more thing on top of a giant mess, not something that I wanted to hear. And I really feel bad for Sale, because I mean, the Tommy John, that happens over time. But, I mean, the rib injury while he was working out, the pinky, I mean, that's just so random. Now you throw this. I mean, I feel for him because I know how big of a competitor he is.
Right. And the first thing that came to mind for me when I saw that, as you mentioned, you know, it was sort of already written in the stars that he's probably going to be out for the season. But you throw $90 million down the drain. Just from what we've seen over the last 3 years for Chris Sale, obviously not looking too great coming back from Tommy John surgery last year, but still did make a tiny bit of an impact for the 2021 Red Sox. But Chaim Bloom had an interesting quote. He said, "We need to dispatch some people to find whoever has the Chris Sale voodoo doll and recover it ASAP." But so, something that sort of made me a little bit frustrated, that even more frustrated that this happened, is he said, "You should have seen him throw at BC Boston College on Saturday. He looked great." So apparently he was coming back on his recovery looking great, but just really tough to see, especially with how everything's going right now with the team.
Yeah, and I just, if you're trying to think for 2023 and beyond, him getting any type of innings, you know, whether it's 30, 40 innings, that would be beneficial, because next year, if he starts the year, hopefully he doesn't have another freak injury or something where he misses time. But I don't think 170, 180 innings next year is really realistic now, because, I mean, you're looking at almost 3 years where he's not accumulated many innings at all.
And it really begs the question, what type of Chris Sale are we going to see? I mean, I was very intrigued with his first start coming back this season, and especially with what we saw in Worcester. I believe he had five walks or something like that. And it's nice to hear Chaim Bloom say, you know, he should be full go next spring. But that's sort of what we thought this season. We didn't expect, you know, a stress fracture to have him out for, you know, until July or June, excuse me. And then, you know, that freak injury happened. But it's tough to see, especially with, you know, how many questions there are for the Red Sox rotation going into 2023. And, you know, we could even say pretty much the whole depth chart on who's going to be on the team next year. But, you know, we also saw Jackie Bradley Jr. sign with the Toronto Blue Jays on a major league deal, which I was a little bit surprised about. But it was also very weird for me to see him in a Blue Jays hat tonight so far.
Yeah, I don't love that. I understood letting him go, but I did not want him to go to a rival and help a team out, because defensively he can help any team in the big leagues out. I was a little surprised since they acquired Whit Merrifield. I thought Merrifield would kind of be the super utility guy. He can play some outfield. I thought that was going to be their kind of utility guy, and to see them then sign JBJ, I did not see that one coming. Not sure how many ABs he's going to get, because that offense, I mean, I guess they could probably afford to just throw a position with JBJ as a hitter, because he is so good defensively and they have such a deep lineup. But yeah, I wasn't happy to see him go there anywhere else but in the East.
It's pretty crazy that now that we're talking about Jackie Bradley Jr. and Andrew Benintendi, both on some of the biggest rival teams for the Red Sox and both in division. But are you one of those people who is, you know, I've been seeing on Twitter left and right, you know, there's some people who hated JBJ when he was on the team, and now they're like, oh my God, why did they release him? Like, I still want him here. And, you know, especially with what happened to Duran this weekend, the whole, you know, JBJ would have caught that. You know, that would have happened if Jackie Bradley was still on the team. So I want to get your thoughts on that, because it's been getting kind of annoying seeing that.
Yeah, I feel like I do kind of go in waves with Jackie, because he's such a streaky hitter. And when he is in one of his hot streaks, I mean, he can honestly carry an offense. He can be that hot. I mean, defensively, it really doesn't get any better. I love watching him just nonchalantly, you know, track a ball down. It looks like he doesn't even try. And, you know, as we saw in Kansas City, I mean, it looks like Duran is trying as hard as he can and he still can't come up with it. So it's such it's two polar opposites in terms of what we're seeing. And it's also hard for Duran to kind of follow up Jackie Bradley Jr. because we're so used to such a stellar outfielder. But I do think the hate and now the love, it's kind of ridiculous. You got to pick one. I've always been a JBJ fan. I just get super frustrated because it just, the lows are extremely low with Jackie.
Yeah. It's so crazy looking at his home and away splits too. I mean, he's an all-star hitter if you just stuck him at Fenway and he only hit at Fenway. And that's one thing, especially when, you know, he was starting to find his footing here in Boston, and they were bringing him up and down from back then Pawtucket, because it seemed like every single season it was, oh, JBJ has a new approach to the plate, or he changed his swing, or he found this new thing. And every single year I got intrigued thinking, oh my God, we're finally going to see Jackie Bradley, you know, hit consistently. And it just never seemed to get anywhere close to that.
Yeah. And let's not forget that he won an ALCS MVP. Like, he was huge. I mean, he's had some big moments for the Red Sox, and to waive him, I get it, but at the same time, I think because of what he's done for the organization over the last decade or so, I think I would rather see them keep him and, you know, maybe make a move elsewhere, because there's plenty of guys on this roster that really do not belong on the roster. And I think if the Red Sox lineup was 7-8 deep, where you felt like everyone's giving you competitive at-bats, I think people would feel differently with JBJ in the lineup. But when you have four or five spots that are, sometimes it feels like automatic outs, and JBJ is one of them, I feel like people really start to lose their patience.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And especially, you know, we saw it really bad in April, and it's been starting, the narrative has been starting to creep back up of, you know, the 7, 8, 9 sort of hitters just being so detrimental to this Red Sox offense. And, I wish him all the best. I hope he is able to find his footing in another franchise. But, now that Renfro deal really puts a lot of pressure on David Hamilton and Alex Benellis to make an impact for this Red Sox roster, because we're seeing what Renfro is doing over there in Milwaukee. I hope you are enjoying my conversation with Micah, but I just want to take a second to talk to you about Liver Health Formula. So I don't know if you know this, but the liver is the body's metabolic furnace. It's responsible for flushing out harmful toxins and igniting your fat-burning metabolism. But thanks to modern diet rich and unhealthy processed foods and constant exposure to thousands of man-made environmental toxins, most of us have overworked our livers. But now it's easy to rejuvenate your liver health and reignite your metabolism thanks to Liver Health Formula by Pure Health Research. And this contains 8 liver-boosting super nutrients like turmeric and beet and artichoke extract, and all of which work together to wake up a sluggish liver and turn it into a toxin-flushing, fat-burning machine. So no bloated belly, no more uncomfortable digestion, and all of the best Liver Health Formula makes it easier to maintain a healthy body weight long-term. So get a free bottle of CurbFit with your order. CurbFit is a safe and all-natural appetite supplement, making it easier for you to say no to naughty foods. And this makes it a perfect complement to Liver Health Formula. So go to liverhelp.com/MLB to learn more. Again, that's getliverhelp.com/MLB to try Liver Health Formula completely risk-free. And you claim a free bottle of CurbFit with every order. Go to getliverhelp.com/MLB now to get started. Now let's get back to my conversation with Micah. But, we've brought up Jaron Duran a few times so far in this episode. I've yet to talk about the hypocrisy that we saw in center field in Kansas City. And I want to get your thoughts on that, because, I've had the pleasure of being able to interview Jaron. He's a very nice guy. But, I feel like the questioning of his maturity last year is really starting to gleam forward in front of all of the baseball world. You know, we saw what happened after the Tapia Grand Slam, what he said to the media, as well as, we also saw, if you doubt us, don't come and root for us when we come back. And, now we're starting to see everything that unfolded in Kansas City. But it's really unfortunate to see a guy showing his immaturity really in front of all of the baseball world. And now, you're even hearing MLB Network talk about it.
Yeah, I made a tweet on I think Sunday I was during the game, and I'm like, I think Red Sox fans would be more understanding if we were talking about a 19, 20, 21 year old, but Duran is 25.
Yep.
You know, he's not, this isn't his first rodeo. He's been around the game long enough where, you know, you can't get into a yelling match with a fan after you've made some mistakes in the outfield.
They were throwing bottle caps at him. That's what he said.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if they were throwing bottle caps at him, Verdugo probably would have been more animated. Like Verdugo, you know, he had that incident with New York when they threw a ball at him and he lost his mind. And I really feel like if they were really throwing bottle caps, and think about how far you would have to throw a bottle cap to reach Duran in the outfield. I don't know. I'm not saying I don't buy that they were doing it, but he needs to show some more mental toughness. I mean, imagine him in Yankee Stadium. What are they going to do to him if they're heckling him in Kansas City? It's a shame because I think in terms of the hit tool, I do think there is still something there. His strikeout numbers are down about 6-7% from last year. His contact rate is up. So, I mean, his numbers are trending in the right direction. I know the average and the OBP, it's not all there just yet. But I do think there is something there at the bat. But the fan base has turned on him completely, which is a shame, and because you would kind of hope that the fan base can lift him up. He's a young guy. You know, hopefully he can be a part of the future. But I really don't know how he recovers from so many mistakes in such a short period of time.
It really is crazy how much – the narrative is flipped on him over the last, you know, less than a month. Because when he first got caught up on this most recent stint, you know, everybody's like, keep him leading off. You know, that speed is like nothing else. And, you know, now we're starting to see his inefficiency to play center field. And, you know, that's one thing that I mentioned when I think it was the I think it was after the Tapia Grand Slam and how he dealt with the media, because that's one thing that one of the media members said in Worcester is, you know, he's used to, you know, 2 to 3 media members interviewing him, and, you know, he's got to get used to the Boston media. But that's something that, you know, I said on this podcast is, you know, if we're talking about a 20, 22 year old, that's a different story. But Duran's 25 and he's not a rookie anymore. You know, this is his second year and his third stint up in Boston. Like, you need to understand, it goes, you know, L.A., New York, Boston. You know, those are the three-headed monsters of the major markets. And, I hope he's able to, you know, after this season ends, you know, take some time and really mature up. But I hope, you know, somebody like Alex Verdugo, he, you know, it's pretty crazy that we're talking about he's only in his second year of 162 games. I hope he, you know, puts it, takes him under his wing and really starts to groom him into a professional major league player, because, you know, right now he's not playing like a professional whatsoever.
He's not. And I think, you know, he is, I believe I looked today, he has 298 career plate appearances. So if the Red Sox keep trending in this direction, now's the time to really give him those extra at-bats. Mm-hmm. But how much longer are they going to go with him? If he gets another 150 at-bats and he has 450 to 500 at-bats under his belt, are we really going to say, like, Jaron Duran is an outfielder next year? Maybe not a center fielder, but could we put him in left or right? Are we really going to say that going into 2023? I don't know. And his value is really going to start dropping, especially if he, you know, has these problems with the media. I mean, his trade value is going to be nothing because of his performance and his immaturity. So I really feel like the next 2 months, he has to turn it around before the offseason. He's got to turn around the next 2 months.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's incredible how much him and Dalbec's trade value is completely diminished, really in the last, you know, you could say half a season or, you know, year or so. But especially with when Duran, before he first got called up, I mean, he was looked at as the number one prospect in this system and so much buzz around his name. But, you know, hoping and praying, you know, he can figure it out. You know, as I mentioned, somebody has to be there to mentor this kid. And, you know, Alex Cora did give his confidence in Duran in center field, saying that's our guy in center field. So it's good that, you know, they're not trying to move him around, because I feel like even though, you know, he hasn't looked great there, if you continue to move him around and lower his confidence, you could see similar stuff if you put him around on the corners. But, you know, we also saw the Red Sox, with all the bad news that we saw today, you know, there was a tiny bit of positives. They signed a right-hander, Harris Familia. I think that's how you say his first name. I looked up the pronunciation, and, you know, they had a little video on how you said it, but it wasn't very clear. So tried my best. To a minor league deal, he signed with the Phillies on a one-year deal, $6 million during the offseason, and over 34 innings. Get ready. This is not pretty whatsoever. He registered an ERA of 6.09. And when you look at the advanced metrics, you know, he does have a 4.71 xERA, and his FIP is 4.88. So, you know, some of it was the bad defense, but at the same time, still not great numbers whatsoever. But he's going to be starting in Worcester today, on Tuesday. So I'm curious to see sort of what potentially he might be able to figure out down in Worcester, and if we could see him potentially make an impact during maybe September or something like that for the Red Sox.
So Familia, he was incredible with the Mets, because he was their closer at the time, and he had a bowling ball sinker, and he had, I think, one or two really big save years, might have been the 30s. And I feel like ever since then, it's like teams have been trying to rediscover that form in 20, maybe say 17 or 18, I feel like. And he hasn't found it. And he's been injured. He's had issues with control. And to me, this is just it's a throwing a dart and hoping that you find something. I mean, at this point with the Red Sox bullpen, it doesn't hurt to take the chance. And I don't know if there would be any value in trying, if he does figure it out, if for next year. I have no idea what that would look like. But I don't have high expectations for this move.
This reminds me of a Carlos Martinez move. And what's funny is nobody really updated any Red Sox fans on how he did in Worcester. Well, that's because he allowed 10 earned runs. I believe it was in like 2 or 3 innings. You know, I saw the stats on that, and I go, oh, so that's why we didn't hear about him. Because I remember, you know, when they made that signing, some guys were like, yo, hopefully you can get back to form, you know, from 2019, 2020. Because Martinez was a really good starter and a pretty good reliever for the Cardinals. But I'm praying that Familia can get back to that Mets form. But as you mentioned, just more of reliever depth, but nothing really to get too excited about.
No, I don't think so. I mean, in September, I would bring him up and see what he can do. I mean, I don't know if, like I said, I'm not sure with options or if they can sign him to a 1 year deal for 2 or 3 million. Maybe that'll be an option. But I also don't think he can be much worse than some of those mid inning relievers that they've been throwing out there recently.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And, you know, especially with one of the injuries that most recently was announced, is Tanner Houck is going to be put on the 15-day IL with lower back inflammation. Caleb Ort will be back up. And luckily, some more positive injury information. Kiki Hernandez will start his rehab assignment on Wednesday. We also saw Michael Wacha go 4 1/3 innings in Portland. And weirdly enough, you know, this day could have gotten much, much worse if you know, the tables had turned a little bit for the outcome of what happened to Wacha after his second pitch. He got a comebacker off of his right foot. Thank God he was all good. Ended up going 4 1/3. But that could have been detrimental to the Red Sox rest of their rotation. He did allow 2 earned runs, 4 hits, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts. Honestly, very weird with how, you know, how different his starts are from Portland and Worcester. He ended up going 4 innings, no hits, no walks, 8 strikeouts in Worcester, but did a little bit worse in Portland. Still trying to calibrate why that happened. I don't know. A little bit of inconsistent control, some said, who were at the game. And Tyler Danish will start his rehab assignment tomorrow, and Trevor Story has started swinging a bat. So luckily there's some positives today.
Yeah, the injuries have been it feels like every day there's a new guy going on the IL. It's been quite frustrating. I don't know if there's enough time for the players coming back to really make an impact and try to push this team towards making some type of push down the stretch. I mean, I'm still hopeful that they can do that. I think they're, what, 4 or 5 games out of the final wild card spot today. So I'm hopeful. But the Houck one, I've had this idea in my mind that the Red Sox were going to have this crazy good bullpen with Whitlock, Strom, Schreiber, and Houck. Like those four, I felt like if you could get those four healthy and pitching at the same time, you would have a legit bullpen. And they just have not been able to get those four healthy and pitching at the same time all season long. And it just, I really feel like those four could be something very strong at the end of the game. But I just don't think it's ever going to happen at this season.
It's unfortunate. I mean, that's the main thing that, you know, I was thinking at the start of July. You know, we were getting like 2 updates every day of new injuries. And I completely forgot about Matt Strom because him and Trevor Story have just been, their updates have been completely silent over the last month after they both got hit on opposite hands. And I actually made this joke on the podcast the day after. I'm like, maybe they should just switch hands. Like, obviously they got the same exact injury just on opposite hands. But I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, some of these guys are coming back a little bit later. And, you know, you're even seeing with some of the guys who have most recently returned. Obviously, we saw Garrett Whitlock as well as Rich Hill. And Rafael Devers. I don't know why I completely forgot about him. With all them coming back, you know, we're still seeing the Red Sox struggle. Hope that you guys are enjoying my conversation with Micah, and him and I are hoping to try and put some good juju into the Red Sox so then they can get a ring on their finger by the end of the year. But if you're looking to get a ring on your finger for a special someone or just looking to get some fine jewelry as a present, BlueNile.com is the number one place to get just that. And they have simple online tools that help you choose the diamond shape, size, and clarity, as well as setting style. And their bench jewelers will then handcraft your perfect piece of jewelry, so then every single one is one of a kind. So if you're looking for fine jewelry and have trouble choosing, they also have their jewelry experts on hand 24/7 available via phone or chat to help you find a memorable gift at every budget. So make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com. And going on now is Blue Nile's anniversary sale, which saves you up to 40% on classic fine jewelry pieces and 25% on engagement ring settings. Plus, every order is insured, shipped free, and arrives in discreet packaging that won't give away what's inside. Shop stress-free and find your forever piece. Go to BlueNile.com today. And that poses a question of, I'm curious, Michael, what do you think that this team could have done during the offseason, during the trade deadline, outside of the, you know, the obvious ones of, you know, getting a first baseman or getting a closer? What do you think is the main issue for this team this season?
The Hunter Renfro trade, I really have no issue with, because I felt like they were selling high on Renfro, which is fine. If that's what, you know, Bloom decided was the right move, okay. But you cannot go into a season with Jackie Bradley Jr., who had one of the worst seasons in the history of baseball in terms of what his numbers were last year offensively, with him as one of your 3 outfielders.
Yeah.
You know, that to me, that just, it set them back before the season even started. And they had Schwarber, who I think had like 12, 14 home runs, something like that, in when he was acquired between the regular season and the postseason. Renfro hit 31, 32 home runs last year. So there was a lot of power. And I know they brought Story in, who's a power hitter. But that's a lot for one guy to really replace. And Martinez
combined, yeah, it's pretty crazy.
It is. And Martinez and Bogarts, their power numbers are significantly down from where they are in terms of their career norms. So the power, in my opinion, is completely lacking on this team. And in baseball, when the pitching is super, super good some nights, you know, you don't have the ability to string together 3, 4, 5 hits in an inning to have a big inning. You need that a walk and a home run, and there's your two runs. And I feel like the Red Sox, you know, they had a really strong stretch in May and June, but they weren't playing very good competition. You know, they were playing weaker pitching staffs, and their offense took advantage of that. Now they have faced much better pitching in July, and the offense just, it's not deep enough to give this team a shot on a nightly basis. And the last month, the starting pitching has been dreadful. And I don't know. I mean, do you think Bloom, do you think it was wrong for him to try to go out and acquire 6-7 starters like he did? Or do you think he should have went out and got maybe one guy where you can really count on based on his previous numbers and his career norm where he's a durable starter?
I think, you know, with some guys, you take them or leave them. The one thing with me that I was completely wrong about is Michael Wacha. If you told me Michael Wacha was going to have a 280 ERA, I would have thought you were crazy. Because during leading up to the season, I thought $7 million was too much for him. But boy, was I wrong. And I'm going to say that to the rooftops. You know, I was wrong on that one. But, you know, obviously Rich Hill hasn't really worked out. But I think if Bloom didn't have the depth that he built during this offseason in terms of the rotation, in terms of some of the guys down in Worcester, you know, even though, you know, a guy like Yomer Sanchez hasn't completely worked out or giving you really too much coming up as an injury reinforcement, he's there. You know what I mean? You're not having Jack Lopez come up like we saw last year during the COVID outbreak. No disrespect to Jack Lopez, but you know, I have a little bit more trust in a proven major leaguer than a guy who is making his major league debut after like 9 or 10 years in the minors. But I think, you know, it's more of the aggressiveness of believing in this team. I think that, you know, Bloom sort of threw some of these things together, expecting that this team would be able to still have the magic that they had last year. And it's disgraceful to even think about that this team was 2 wins away from the World Series last year. Because it's practically the same team, but the feeling is nowhere close to the confidence that we had turning on the Red Sox every single night and having confidence that they were going to tack a W in the column at the end of the game. And now it's really tough to, you know, really point the blame on Bloom with all the injuries and everything. And that's one of the biggest things that, you know, I've been arguing against. And the one thing that really doesn't make any sense to me is, you know, if the season, you know, is looked at as, you know, not really working out how you want it at the end of the day, you know, is the team hoisting up the trophy? I don't think so. And so why are you keeping JD Martinez? Why are you keeping Nathan Eovaldi at the trade deadline? And you know, if you were going to go for it, why are you getting nobody to reinforce the bullpen? Why are you getting no closer? And so it's really just the direction for me. And it's really tough as somebody who has preached in high and we trust ever since I joined this podcast, and being able to keep that and still believe in the guy at the helm, who in my opinion is one of the smartest guys in baseball. But at the end of the day, I trust Chaim Bloom that the direction that he wants to put this team towards of being a consistent winner will happen. But I'm just so fed up with sucking one year, being good another year, sucking the next year. I mean, this feels like 2014 and 2019 all over again. It's so crazy.
Yeah, I don't think there's another organization in baseball that does this up and down. And like the ups are crazy. I mean, they're you know, ALCS World Series type ups, but the downs, you know, this year isn't, you know, they don't have the worst record in baseball, but they were going to Tampa Bay in July. They had the top spot in the wild card and they had so many injuries. And then in that series, you lose Strom and you lose Story. And it was kind of like this team was waiting, like, give me something to just get by, because we're in a brutal stretch where they played, I think, 24 to 27 games against teams over 500. And they just kept seeing guys go on the IL, and they're bringing up a AAA team. And that's what this roster has felt like, is a AAA team. Yeah. And they refused to go out and add. I mean, Tommy Pham 3 weeks ago would have been a nice little add, just a big leaguer who has done it before. Mm-hmm. Just to help. I feel like a lot of the weight early in the season was put on Devers, Bogarts, and Martinez, and they were incredible. But it's unrealistic to expect them to carry an entire offense for a 162. And Devers is, in my opinion, he's a top five hitter in the game. Mm-hmm. He's incredible. I don't think Bogarts is quite at that level. He's a great hitter. But they're not going to do it all season long.
Right.
And you either add or you subtract at the deadline. And I really feel like by the Vasquez move, Bloom was subtracting. And then the Hosmer deal fell right into his lap and it made it look like, hey, we're still adding. But I think unless they did not get any type of package that they felt was valuable for Martinez or Eovaldi, I don't know why they kept them. I really don't. I think you could have packaged Vasquez and Martinez, and you could have probably got that Vientos prospect that the Mets were kind of linked with. There was mm-hmm. some talk there. But I just – you either sell or buy because right now they're playing the middle ground. And is this team good enough to make a playoff spot? I mean, maybe they can sneak in if they catch fire. I don't think so. But they're also not going to get a – top five pick in the draft. So what are you doing? Like I just, and you have guys who are leaving the roster in 2 months.
Yeah.
So I do not know unless they feel they can re-sign Eovaldi better if he is not traded.
I don't want him.
I don't, not for the price that,
yeah.
I mean, his velocity is way down. And I'm a Bloom supporter too, but this year just feels like a throwaway season. And it's a shame when you come away from a season where you're two wins away from the World Series and you had a 2-1 series lead at home. To me, a throwaway series in Boston, like you don't do that in this city. You just don't.
And that's, you know, I loved what the Sox did in the deadline. The JD and the Eovaldi and the bullpen thing was my main issue. You know, as tough as it was for Vasquez to see him leave, I like the prospects that we got. You know, I'm all about building for the future. But, you know, Carrabba said this in his most recent episode, you know, with some of the losing seasons, you know, there was guys coming up like the Vasquez and the Bogarts, the guys to get excited about. And, you know, there's Cassis, but Cassis shouldn't be the savior. And when you have no clue who is going to be on the depth chart next season, one guy isn't going to fix the issue. And, this is something that, you know, Lauren and I have said, you know, since day one of starting this podcast, we have no clue what 2023 is going to look like. But, you know, we're going to try not to get a headache trying to think about it and just focus on this season. But, you know, this has been a really nice therapy session. I said at the start of the episode, I want to do my best to be as positive as possible. But you got me on a little bit of rant at the end there. I had to get a little my passion and my anger out, frustration a little bit out from this last month or so. But I've really enjoyed talking to you about, you know, how tough this has been over the last month or so with you, Micah. And we definitely got to get you back on again because you got some great insight, not only on Twitter, but also through this episode. And, you know, for anybody that wants to follow you, support you, how can they do that?
They can follow me on Twitter at Ballpark Buzz. I also have a newsletter through Substack. There's a link on my Twitter. They can click that. They can subscribe to it. So those are the two ways that I pretty much push content out.
Perfect. Well, everybody go and support him over there. He does a great job with giving you really, really honest and passionate insight, not only for the Red Sox, but for baseball as well. But as always, greatly appreciate you coming on, Micah.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it. It was fun.
Hope that you did enjoy my conversation with Micah Storm, a.k.a. Ballpark Buzz. And as I mentioned, we did our best to stay positive, got into a little bit of a rant there at the end. But that's what happens when, you know, your favorite team isn't doing so great. You got to give out some of that frustration. But we want to hear your thoughts on how the team has been performing so far. Put out some of your frustration like Micah and I did over on Twitter. Follow us over there. It's LO_Red Sox. We want to hear your guys' thoughts. And that's one thing that Lauren and I really try to do with this podcast is make it the most fan-engaging podcast that we can to get you guys as involved as possible. But we want to thank you guys so much, as always, for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Now make your second listen Locked On MLB Podcast. Paul Francis Sullivan, Please Call Him Sully brings you humor, passion, and his unique perspective on every team and the biggest stories around the league. Follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow myself over on Twitter. It's at Jake Iggy, as well as my co-host, Lauren, but at La La La, three laws, Lauren with four R's. But get ready for a week filled of more guests, more of Red Sox voices from over on Twitter. We're having the founder of the Beyond the Monster, as well as the co-host of the Obstructed View Red Sox podcast, Chris Henrique, on the show tomorrow to give his thoughts on how the team has been performing over the last few months. But make sure to go over and check in for that starting tomorrow. But if you have not yet, make sure to subscribe to Locked On Red Sox over on YouTube, where we post the video version and whatever audio platform that you are listening to this on. But we greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. As always, we hope that you have a great rest of your day. And we'll end this episode as we always end it. Let's go Sox. Peace.